Welcome to the Grappling Grappling Rewind Podcast.
Welcome to this week on the Grappling Rewind Podcast. In this week's show, we got a big show, Josh. We are going to recap Third Coast Grappling 6, the heavyweight GP. We're gonna recap EUG, Up Your Game, or Elevate Your Game, their first inaugural event, the 160-pound tournament. We're going to preview Fight to Win 169. We're going to preview the Emerald City Invitational, talk a little bit about the Abu Dhabi World Pro that's happening this week, and talk a little bit about a couple of cards that have been announced before that. As always, I'm your host, Maine, joined with the co-host,
Josh.
How you doing, Josh?
I'm doing well. I can speak.
Yeah, I'm having a rough week already. Got that second coronavirus vaccine on Saturday. Had the big issues with it. It was great, but I'm good here today. Sort of excited to talk about the weekend's events, Josh. Before we get into that, because there was a bunch of great matches, let's talk a little bit of news. Don't have a ton as far as grappling news, but we do have the pretty much final lineup for the next Who's Number One happening on April 30th. On Floyd Grappling. 30th. Coming right up.
Oh, my God.
25
goodness.
Days away. What do you want to start with this one? Because it is absolutely
stacked. Top of the card. We'll just go with that.
We got Craig Jones versus Ty Rotolo, the match that...
That got announced that they were really trying to hype, that nobody was asking for, but we're all okay with.
Oh, yeah. This is a dope match. This is a great match because this will show me, like, okay, where does Ty stack up against, like, the elite of 88?
Is Craig really like 88 still?
I mean, yeah, I think he'd go to 88. Like, I think
let's talk about Craig shouting out the Grappling Rewind podcast.
He did on a live stream with Leg Locker. Craig. He was like, "Yeah, I listen to you guys every occasionally, and I skip through the bad matches." I was like,
"Thanks,
appreciate it, Craig." yeah, I think Craig will probably still cut to 88 for ADCC. I doubt he'll go to plus 99. Under 99. I just don't think. I think Ty will definitely go to 88. He's talked about going to 88.
Wow. He was in 66 last time, and then he's going to go to 88.
Dude, he was also like a child, which is why Craig is only fighting children really? Leading up to this matchup. Dude, it's been a great week for memes for Craig Jones. Shout out to Craig Jones for the memes this week with fighting women and children. He like leaned into it hard with his world tour, and I appreciate it. It made me laugh this week. And I think that Ty will, I mean, I probably not making 77.
170 pounds?
In a year? What's he, not 18 now, 17 still?
I don't
He's still
know.
17.
What's he
He's
eating?
Still growing up. He's still getting bigger. Every match we see him in, he's bigger. I assume he's going to put on some actual, like, mass as he gets to, like, 18,
Look,
19
stop telling
years
me
old.
About these young kids that are, like, all in the divisions that are going to beat all of us fucking hobbyists up when we're like, hey, we're just going to jump into a random tournament and have a good time.
And then Ty Rotolo's going to stomp
my face. Ty Rotolo's your first match.
So, no, I think he'll do. I think this is a really good telling match of like how he'll do. I also think we've seen his leg lock defense improve consistently. Craig Jones, especially recently, is like showing off his outside leg lock entries to subbing everyone. We saw him versus Jimenez. We saw him versus Ronaldo Jr., another Atos guy. It'll be really interesting to see how Ty deals with that. We saw him sort of shut down Nicky Ryan's leg lock entries earlier, so seeing him versus Craig, a lankier, kind of more experienced guy in that leg lock game, will be super interesting to me. That's the head of the card. Next match on the card, we have another one I'm super excited about. We have Lovato Jr. versus Gilbert Burns, Dorino.
I like how you refused to say his first name because you were afraid if you were going to pronounce it with an H or not.
Rafael Lovato Jr. Every time in on the show, I give him the Brazilian treatment with Rafael Lovato
there
Jr.
There you go.
That's a great matchup. I'm very, very pleased that they're not throwing
Is it
Lovato.
In the gi?
I assume it's no gi. But actually, with both of them, it wouldn't surprise me. Dorino and Lovato are both shown here in the poster as no gi. Both of them have talked about doing
they're
gi.
They're probably much closer in weight now. Like Lovato still looks super shredded, and Burns fights at 70 now.
Yeah, and he's cutting a little bit to get to 70. He's not a big 70, but like...
It'll be interesting to see what it is, but like Lovato's just got so much length on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very, very interested. What's Dorino's world title at? I think he's one... His world title is... Yeah, lightweight, and Lovato is at...
Heavy?
Yeah. One or two above Dorino.
Or ultra heavy.
But again, we're talking about 10 plus years ago for both. I think Dorino's 2013, if I have that right. Maybe 2011? I just recently looked this up on BJJ Heroes.
I can't remember.
Him when this
but it's been
announced.
A while for Lovato.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's been, like, no joke, he has been a black belt for, I think, 20 years.
Wouldn't surprise me at all.
Like, he's been a black belt as long as I've been training, and I think he was a black belt before then.
I knew what year he got promoted, but regardless,
I can't remember.
They're both veterans. They're both guys that did it in May. Dorino still fights and, again, just fought for a world title in the UFC. Lovato had to retire because of his brain
thing
he has in Bellator as the world champion in Bellator. Very excited for this match. I'm happy that we're seeing it. This is, I think, a very, very well-matched match. I think we lost saw Burns versus Langacker and Polaris, and that was just sort of a little too much for him then. It was in the gi, like, what, a year ago? A year and a half ago, maybe?
You can't find it now because it got pulled down, but Langacker versus Izaki Behance, who...
I watched that this morning. Somebody posted on Reddit, and it was good.
A barn burner. It was great.
This is another great matchup. I'm very excited to preview this closer to the event. Also on the card, unless you have anything else on that, Josh, also on the card we have PJ Barch versus Nicky Ryan. Really interested for this match as well. I'm kind of curious to see how Barch deals with. I kind of know he's going to deal with Nicky's leg lock attempts. I'm curious to see if we're going to see more like scrambling to the back and just how he deals with that.
There's no, like, for me personally, there's nothing that drives me to want to watch this match, to be 100% honest. Like, what was the last time we saw Nicky Ryan?
We saw him versus, was it Rotola a little bit ago?
Maybe.
I think Rotola was the last match.
The last match that we saw with PJ Barch, if I'm not mistaken, was Andrew Wiltsy, right?
Yeah, I think the last he was number one. It was a couple weeks ago.
That was a snoozer.
It was on the slower end.
I don't want to see that again. I hope they both have, like, put on a pace, and it's really exciting. But
speaking of putting on a pace,
yeah,
let's talk about this match. Andrew Wiltsy versus David Garma.
Yeah, you jumped a little bit, but that's fine. This, when we saw it, we were like, yo, this one will be fire. And because Garmo is hyper-aggressive with his submission attacks.
Yeah.
Hyper-aggressive. Like,
it's one of my more favorite guys to watch.
Cause yeah,
he just throughout the entire match, he's not a guy you can like tab through his match. You kind of got to watch the whole match
because
he's
going to
be throwing. It's awesome.
Wiltsy is also an aggressive player. He's not as aggressive as Garmo.
He's a much more stop and start aggressive guy. And I'm very curious to see how Garmo is pretty sustained aggression throughout the entirety of a match. Wiltsy is a guy that will kind of use that aggression and then stop you in places, and that's sort of where he will work. I'm very curious to see if he'll be able to sort of stop Garmo in the places he wants to, because Garmo is a guy that is somewhat difficult to stop for most people. He's very, very hard to consistently be able to put in a place and then keep there. And that's sort of what I think Wiltsy deals with best, is being able to find, like, put a guy in a place,
slowing him down, keep him there.
And I think that's, like, stylistically, I'm very interested in how this works out, because that's the sort of where both guys thrive.
My only, like, little bit of advice for Garmo would be to tape up his knee sleeve so it doesn't slip down like it did at Fight to Win, because if somebody doesn't care and he, like, is fidgeting with it and trying to pull it back up, Wiltsy will attack that, I would assume. Like, he would start attacking while he was trying to fix it. So, yeah, tape that shit up and continue doing what you're doing. Because he's going to be diving on that head and that Kimura, like, constantly. And it's going to be awesome. And just seeing, like, what Wiltsy is going to do to counter that, and just how he potentially could slow him down. It'll be a very interesting match, but I think it'll be super exciting.
Yeah, excited for that one. Also on the card, we have Jessica Khan versus Grace Gundrum. I haven't seen Grace in a little bit, but
last time we saw her was against Maisa Bastos, and she
Bastos took
lost. But it wasn't like a blowout.
I think
anything.
We saw her right before that against Patty Fontes, and she won. Did she submit with triangle? She tapped her.
I thought it was a Dead Orchard, but it might be. I think it was that, or it was like
Dead Orchard or Triangle. One of the two.
Yeah.
Dead Orchard, if you don't know, is a arm in Triangle where you finish the arm.
Yeah, or a double arm bar. For some reason, I'm thinking
Dead Orchard sets up like that way a lot, where it's both arms in, and they kind of try to pull out, and you get one of the two arms. They look very, very similar, and they're called similar stuff. So that'll be a fun matchup. We'll talk about Jessica Khan's match versus Maisa Bastos actually on EUG or.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a UG. I got my promotions mixed up this weekend, later in this show, so look forward to that. We'll preview this match a bit more, like, in a couple of weeks, but I'm honestly pretty excited for that matchup. It should be fun in Nogi. Also on the card, we have Ethan Cronston versus versus Cade Rotolo.
The other Rotolo.
I think this is the rematch. Very excited for this. This is the one they wanted to run back. I hope that wasn't versus Ty. I think that was versus Cade. Again, I want to see it run back. It was a very, very close, very controversial decision the last time. Deservedly getting run back. Also on the card, we have...
Free on YouTube.
We have Hasim Rida versus...
Sloan Claymer.
That's his name. I just know him as Sloan. Sloan Claymer.
If you don't know who Sloan is, he's the gigantic-looking guy with cornrows or something. Trains out of Keenan's gym.
Legion.
Yeah, he just got his
Fight to Win brown belt champion.
He just got his black belt. He's a really good wrestler, I think.
Everything I've seen from him, he's got dope leg locks. He pushes a fervorous pace whenever we cover him. So super excited to see. Again, Hassam's a guy that we've historically seen kind of not do as well with the pace. But you talked about this in the pre-show. He's now training with the pace guy, David Garmo. So I'm very curious to see how that shifted training with Garmo, you know, from moving over.
He's
to
looked
Korea.
More aggressive. I will say that. So I'm hoping that stays up and they can both keep a pace because both of these guys are really exciting jiu-jitsu guys. So hopefully it will be a very interesting and exciting match. Also, there's Jessica Crane versus Lauren Sears. That's at 115, all on the prelims. So yep. Jessica Crane is from Aries and Lauren Sears is from 10th Planet. So we're going to obviously see some guard work, some stretchy, flexible, reverse crack gym. Mm-hmm.
Every 10th Planet name for a guard they got. Those are both on the free prelims. So you can watch those, I think, on YouTube or Facebook. So that's awesome. Again, this definitely catch the Hasim versus Sloan match. I'm actually pretty surprised that is on the free prelims. So if you don't have Flow, definitely tune in for that one because it'll be a really, really fun no. I assume it's Nogi matchup. Again, both guys do both Gi and Nogi. I just know both of them for their Nogi work recently, but I know they both do compete in both. So it very well could be a Gi match. Josh, that's all I got for news. Nothing else. Want to move into the recap for Third Coast?
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, you want to do EUG first?
Third Coast is fine.
All right, let's do Third Coast. So under a recap of Third Coast Grappling 6, the heavyweight GP. Josh, which match do you want to start with?
Yeah, no. Let's start in the order of which this is listed here so we're not throwing ourselves all around.
Shout out to BJJ Heroes for the results.
Man, always coming in clutch.
Or Jits Magazine.
Always coming in
clutch. Or Jiu-Jitsu Times.
Yes,
Grappling. For all the places that aggregate results because I no longer do it on the grapplingrewind.com, look for that some point in 2021. I would like to get back into that. We do have a website that has fallen off a bit in the pandemic for various reasons. but looking to do some more stuff up that because I'll have some time when I am on surgery leave. We'll get into that at the end of the show. But yeah, let's start with the quarterfinals, Mason Fowler versus Manuel Hibamar. Is there anything in regulation that you want to talk about here?
That finished in golden score?
Yeah, that was an overtime finish.
It all flew. Let me say something first. I hate overtime. I think it's terrible.
I was going to say this to the end, Josh.
I don't care. I don't like it. I think it makes the beginning of the match pointless. And like the golden score thing, like it's okay, I guess.
It's fine for certain matches. It's not my favorite for a tournament bracket with super high level guys because we almost never see like something like we have to see kind of two matches and then the first match doesn't count is really what it turns into. Yes. And it's just a little frustrating. Because these guys are super high level, I would much rather one of the matches count for all the marbles as opposed to we see the first match and then we see the second match. So this finished in overtime in golden score. Mason Fowler finishes this with a one-armed rear naked choke on Manuel Hibamar off of like trying to take Hibamar's back. Hibamar turns out.
Yeah.
Fowler grabs his big meaty arm under his neck and then he does something I missed it on the first watch, but I caught it on the second watch. I was wondering, like, why didn't Hipmar just roll out there? Because he's in a really good position to do so, and you almost never see the one arm rear gonna choke finish like this, because Fowler is kind of teed on the back, almost like a crucifix position for Hipmar, and Hipmar's rolling through in a position where Fowler shouldn't be able to finish this. But Fowler snakes his outside, his free arm under like the armpit grip of Hipmar, and he stops Hipmar from rolling. And you see him reach his hand up right to like the top of almost like not the pec, but in line with the pec under the armpit grip, and clamp. And you see him clamp super hard with his hand and pull him down and in. And that's what's able to stop the roll for Hipmar. So you see Hipmar try to fight the feet because he anticipates getting his shoulder out for the roll. And then you see Fowler with his giant squeezy squeeze arm just squeeze, and Hipmar goes, all right, you got me. Yeah. We've seen Hipmar finish, I mean, not Hipmar, we've seen Fowler finish a couple guys with just insane rear naked chokes. I always kind of thought it was a fluke of position or matchmaking or some reason. Like, we saw him kind of tap Craig Jones with like a face body crank rear naked choke before. And I was like, ah, that's kind of weird positioning. He started in the back. I don't think this is a fluke anymore. I'm going to eat my words on that. I think that Fowler has an astonishingly weird and kind of special
squeeze. He's got really, he's good in transition of catching things and just going.
Yeah.
I think that's like his thing. Like, you know how people will try to work their way onto a specific move or point or submission? Mm-hmm. I think like once he gets to somewhat of a position he wants to be in, he just starts attacking the submission.
He does a really good job of just like, it's a consistent squeeze. Like, he doesn't need to like re-change the grip when he squeezes. He just is either really confident, or he has just an insane squeeze. And I'm kind of leaning on, he just has a genuine,
he's confident in his insane squeeze,
but he genuinely has a special squeeze, I think, which is like, oh, he can do something that a lot of guys just don't have the ability to do. Like, we've seen that from, you know, plenty of guys at the top will have like, oh yeah, like Hodger.
He just has Damian Maya level squeeze, make your nose fucking bleed.
Rick Story. I love gif. It's terrifying every time I see it.
No, but it was great. And yeah, actually, Maine pointed out that grip. I missed it completely. And then we zipped through it again really quick. And I was like, oh, there it is. Really good. I don't want to see Hipmar in no gi anymore. I love watching him in gi. And
I like his gi game. I like his no-gi game, too.
I like his no-gi game, don't get me wrong, but man, he keeps taking these L's, and it makes me so unhappy that he's taking these L's. I'm like, bro, find something in the gi and just murk somebody, please. Because, like, Hipmar is, like, oh, I love watching him. I have his Manuel, what's it called?
What's the name of the DVD?
Yeah.
I'm blanking on the name. As soon as you mentioned it, I was like, oh no, Josh is going to throw to me, because Josh is doing the thing where he stalls for time to try to figure out the name.
Oh, Lapel Manuel, or Manuel Lapel. Yeah. Like, instead.
That's a like great name for a DVD.
Right, but it's like Lapel Manuel, but it's Lapel Manuel. So it's like, play on words. From Jiu-Jitsu X. Find that shit, by the way, and like, use some shit on Jiu-Jitsu X. It's more than just lapel stuff. Although, again, shout out to somebody from the East Coast that's now West Coast, Gannon Lang. Check out that Anubis Guard shit.
Dude, Gannon Lang fucking beat me at Purple Belt. I'm still so
good. I mean, you deserved it.
Yeah. It was a close match. And it's still like, it's the one match at Purple Belt that like I want back. And now he's brown. And just like, I'm still purple. It's
yo,
like,
he would still beat your
he
ass.
He would beat my ass. No, it was close. It was close. And then now it's like, I know it wouldn't be close, and that's what pisses me off the most. I know he just beat my ass.
So he's out there at Legion too. So shout out to him. Good for him. Let's keep going. Kanan Duarte defeating Tex Johnson via golden score.
Dude, I thought this was going to be over really quick. Immediately, Kanan off the bat was like, whoop, whoop, with the quickness, got Texas back. And the commentator was like, oh, it's over. And I was like, it's definitely over. And then Tex was like,
nah,
bro, no, like, I'm not a scrub, but like, I'm gonna get out of back mount. He did.
Dude, Kynan's back takeoff of that was slick.
It was really slick, which is kind of why I thought it'd be so quick, because like, Tex is a guy that will sometimes see, like, you get very hot and very cold, and so if he's having like sort of not an off match, but like, he's a guy that's very hot and cold with how he grapples, and sometimes you'll see guys catch him very quickly, and then he's able to get like beaten. Like, the Craig Jones match at Grapple Fest was like, got his back and then finished him.
I'm not saying that Tex is only good at one thing. But man, like, he relies on going to that one thing, leg locks, I think far too much.
He relies on being able to just absolutely break your leg in half and be terrifying. And that works for a lot of guys, but I think a lot of guys at the highest levels, like those top like 8 to 10 guys, have been there and sort of like are not as afraid of it.
Yeah.
They don't get it. And so he can definitely still catch. We saw him catch Felipe Pena, I think, what, 2 years ago almost? A year and a half ago?
I think that was one of those things that just, like, it happened.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but it can, with Tex, he's a guy that can, it can always happen. So it's always going to be there, but he relies on it really, really heavily.
He goes too much on it, and then, like, it just opens up way too much shit for guys that are fucking,
which is what happened in the Golden Score. He falls back for a leg lock.
And when then, he was about to get fucking double ankle sweep.
Yeah.
And then he lost.
Tex comes up. I mean, he goes for the ankle, kind of double ankle sweeps him, comes up, and then gets the two, and then that's the score. And that was sort of the victory piece. Very, again, very, very close margins of victory here, but kind of still able to take that via points in Golden Score. I don't have really a ton else on that match. I was just getting really surprised with Tex immediately, like, working out of the back mount when it was sort of, I thought it was before our conclusion. Tex was like, bro, no, I'm still really, really good. I'm still not going to get just trumped.
Right.
So that was very impressive to me, but yeah. Relies heavily on the feet. Next match, we have Nick Rodriguez versus Pedro Mourinho. Nick Rodriguez takes this via decision. Lots of hand fighting and lots of penalties for both guys.
Yeah. Like, you have to play a certain way with both of these guys.
I wish the mat was bigger for this match. We can talk about this at the end, but this match in particular, there were a couple times where I think this would have been a very different match, definitely in favor of Rodriguez, because Rodriguez tends to drive guys really hard, and he takes big steps, or he takes a lot of steps. Actually,
he's a big fucking guy.
He's a big fucking guy.
You're gonna take big steps.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like 6 foot three.
Yeah,
right?
Well, he tends to outmove.
I like how
guys.
Everybody is like 6 foot three.
Yeah, because 6'3" is that big as fuck guy like size.
We're
like,
all just like, oh, that guy's like 6'3".
6'2" is like your big. 6'3" and above, you're just like, you're in another echelon of human size. That's
how tall,
like,
is he? 6'3".
6'3".
You know? How tall is Zach? Like 6'3" is enormous.
Yeah, Zach's enormous. Like, almost everyone on the team is like 5'6", 5'7". You have Zach.
Simon's like 6'.
Oh, Simon is tall, isn't he?
Foot one or two,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, he's a blue, but what the hell does he know? I love you, Simon.
There wasn't a whole lot going on in this match either.
Well, there's a couple times that Nick Rodriguez took Pedro Mourinho's like body lock from the back, but Mourinho did a really good job of using the mat size and also like getting his hips free and not letting Rodriguez ever like settle him, which is something that Rodriguez does really, really well. So again, props to Mourinho here for realizing like if I let Rodriguez like sag on my hips, he is going to murder me. And Mourinho does a really good job, I think two separate times in this match, of getting out of bounds and fighting it. And so, looked good, but again, it was a very, very...
We need a bigger mat.
Yeah, very, very, very slow match. Lots of collar ties, lots of penalties. Rodriguez takes this via decision.
Yes, I like how also it's like the absolute. I'm like, bro, everybody's at least 185 pounds or above.
Yeah.
Let's just call it the heavyweights.
It is the heavyweights. This was the heavyweight GP, and then it became the absolute. But heavyweight, dude, it's MMA heavyweight. It's anyone above 190 and up. You're a heavyweight.
Everybody GP. Like 150 and above. That's heavyweight.
Heavyweight,
sure.
Dude, as long as they're above 150, I can make. Yeah. I weighed in today for my doctor's appointment 148 and a half, and I went.
Wow.
I went.
Almost there.
Tiny man.
Almost there. A couple more bowls and noodles. And you'll be over 150.
I know. I usually am over 150 because it's like been quarantined. I've been getting fat. But I got nervous during surgery, so it's messed with my stomach, so I'm not eating as much. And here we are, bro. Featherweight, here I come, as per usual. But next match, we have Victor Hugo defeating William Tackett via score.
This was an exciting matchup. Tackett was like, I don't give a shit. Let's fucking go. And he took Victor down.
That was it. I was
like, what?
I was astonished with that.
Dude, Tackett was on his shit.
Dude, the way he took Victor down, too.
The overtime is what killed him. He started to, like, tire out a little bit just because he had to deal with
Victor
the size.
Victor Hugo is 265. Tackett is 190.
Oh, no, he's thick.
Maybe. But still, 190, maybe. Maybe pushing 200. Dude. I don't think he pushed. I don't think he's 200 pounds. So you got a guy that's
Tackett,
70
get at
pounds
us. How much do you weigh?
Yeah, I should ask him and figure that out.
No, it was a great match, and Tackett was just on his P's and Q's about staying away from stuff. Near the end of the match is where he got fucked, and he got his guard passed and was in like side control, and like Hugo was trying to finish him in regulation.
Yeah,
because Hugo was looking tired too, and it went to Golden Score, and eventually, you know, well, oh God, the Golden Score things. What really fucked me up too.
It screws me up. Like, I take notes on the first one, and then sometimes I will put the notes in the wrong place.
Which is really what messes
me up.
I can't. I think it was like a technically like a sweep where Hugo went from the bottom to the top, and he got those points.
Yeah. I think it was a sweep. I think that was correct. I could be incorrect.
Yeah.
About this, there's a lot of matches this weekend but that were like that. So
definitely,
that's why
if you
confused.
Didn't watch it before, go back and buy the replay.
Yeah.
Like it's worth it.
Yeah.
It is definitely worth it to go back in. So let's move into the semifinals.
Yeah. Semifinals, we got Victor Hugo defeating Nick Rodriguez via decision.
This was a lot of hand fighting and pushing and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And
one thing that I want to take. Sorry, you go first.
No. Because I know what you're going to say because I was going to bring up the same exact thing. So
although Nick Rodriguez loses this match, this is the match I was kind of most curious to see because Victor Hugo is historically a 265, very, very close in size to Nick Rodriguez, who's about 235, guard player. And we've historically seen Nick Rodriguez struggle with the guard. Last week, we saw Nick Rodriguez repeatedly pass Yuri Samos with body lock passing, and I prophesized. I was like, we're going to see it again, and I'm very curious to see if he's going to do that to Victor Hugo. I don't know if he'd be able to, but the level of improvement we've seen has been crazy. In this match, we saw far more of Nick Rodriguez actually engaging Victor Hugo in the guard and, like, making the right decisions, doing the right things. He never actually ends up passing and getting past him, but we saw him get very, very close on, like, one time, again, with that body lock pass, and, like, the commentary did a good job of talking through what he was doing, how he was doing it. They had a good camera angle that showed the back of Nick's legs and how he was blocking Victor Hugo's shins to do, like, that standard body lock pass. Again, Victor's a goddamn monster and was able to stop it, but you saw stuff from Nick Rodriguez that we have not seen before versus elite level guard players. And you saw a willingness for Rodriguez to engage in the guard and do well. It's been 6 months. That dude has shored up holes in his game.
ADCC is at the end of this year or?
Trials are coming up soon. So ADCC, no. ADCC is 2022. I think it's sometime in 2022. Because it was supposed to be 2021, and it got bumped to the following year. Because trials are going to be this year.
By the time that rolls around, and I'm assuming he'll get an invite, he placed second.
Yeah, usually all medalists, if they want, can come back. That's sort of an unwritten rule of ADCC.
Okay, let's say ADCC. When did you guys go? Was it in the summer?
ADCC is typically in September. So September of 2019.
So right now, April of 2021.
Oh my God, it is that
September
far.
September 2022? Dog. How much better is he going to get?
We've seen him do a camp switch now. Like, he's all the way full at DDS now. In 8 months, and really in 6 months, how much better? Like, he was willing to engage Hugo in the guard. Like,
if you go a year from now, how good is he going to be 12 months from now?
One thing that I thought was really funny in this match is we saw Pedro Mourinho and we saw Victor Hugo in the Golden Score, because you're going to go to Golden Score with Rodriguez. You're not going to outpoint him. You're not going to submit him. You saw both of them put Rodriguez on his back in the guard and was like, because you get to select, if you're up on points, you get to select which position you choose. And both times they went, let's put Nicky Rod on his back because I don't want to stand with him. I don't want to put him in my guard because he can pass now. That's crazy. And both times you saw Nick Rodriguez go, bro, I'm going to wrestle you up. And both times Pedro and Victor Hugo ended up on the feet with Rodriguez, almost getting taken down. Both, I think, Victor elects to pull after they reset in the stand-up and end up on the bottom, and he's able to kind of outpoint
I was kind of
Rodriguez
interested
here
to see if, like, why not start him in his guard?
What do you mean?
Start Nicky in his guard. If you, it's like you can pick the position.
They did. They started Nick Rodriguez with Nick Rodriguez on his back in the guard.
I don't know why I didn't. I was thinking something else It's late already.
Yeah, we, it's, another, it's like 9:30 right now, and Josh and I both got old.
Like,
because I worked like a 10-hour day today, so because I got surgery coming up, so I gotta close some.
Yeah, I don't know why I thought that for some reason, but no, like continually put him in bad positions, and like,
but I think
it's the best way to try to.
I think it's your best spot, but the funny thing is now he's figured out how to tack up and wrestle you from the bottom, and it's gotten terrifying because, again, two elite level guys, Pedro Mourinho and Victor Hugo, like, both had to fight off takedowns from the bottom from Nick Rodriguez, from starting him in statistically probably what is his worst spot, given his wrestling background and his skill set we've seen previously. And both guys ended up having to fight off a dude trying to wrestle them down from the guard position, which I thought was really funny. And a new development, like, Nick Rodriguez would not have had the guard retention abilities and, like, the ability to tactically deal with that a year ago, as well as he did. He could have dealt with it as well as he did to put guys on the offensive from his guard. Crazy improvements. Even though he loses the match, those pieces
only gonna
for
get
me,
better, and it's gonna be scary.
Yeah, those pieces of me were like very telling that, oh, he is Victor Hugo is elite.
If he sticks around, that's the thing. Like, he could do a lot of things. Like, shit, he could be a model.
He is a model.
Like, full time.
He was a full time model.
Continuously, continuously. I don't know if he's still doing it all. Or he could be a fucking full-time pro wrestler if he wanted to.
He's in the development league, I think.
No, because if he was in developmental, he wouldn't be doing any of this.
Oh, that's reasonable. You know more about that than I do.
Yes, I do.
But regardless, looked really impressive. Victor Hugo gets it done here, but very impressed with both guys. Again, impressed with the level of improvement and level of new technical depth that we saw from Rodriguez, because for me, watching, kind of doing what we do on the Grappling Rewind, we watch guys week to week, month to month. When you see a guy that fights at this level, consistently making the type of improvements that Nick Rodriguez is making, bodes very well. And consistently doing it over the course of what we've covered him his entire career since fucking Blue Belt, which was a year ago, by the way, to have him consistently doing that against the level of competition is very telling that they have the ability to continue to make those improvements and they continue to be a force and a factor. Oh, and he's a silver medalist at 24 years old at the best Nogi camp in the world under the best tutelage with the best guys. Very, very high ceiling. Very great match. Watch it. It was a really cool match. Victor Hugo did a great job here. Great game plan. Gets it done. Next match, we have Kanan Duarte defeating Mason Fowler via score overtime. Kanan starts this one off with a deep ass Armin guillotine off of a shot from Fowler.
He's known for him. And
he is known for it.
And that's the thing. It's really wild. But like, also his ability to just like start to take the back and just not give a shit about anything. And just keep going, just keep competing. We will continually watch your matches. So don't stop doing what you're doing, Kanan. It went to Golden Score. Kyotera got a little upset.
He did. Matt's side.
When Mason obviously got scored one. And I'm like, why are we even having this discussion at the moment? Why are you pissed? Like, you know your guy lost.
So Duarte gets a takedown in the Golden Score.
Well, it goes, he transitions through and he ends up on top. And that's the thing, is he ends up on top behind him. And they were like, all right, cool. That's it. Oh, well, why is he getting points for that? And it's like, come on, you know why. Don't just argue for argument's sake. It's not a good look.
I actually couldn't figure out why he was arguing there, because I watched the sequence and I went, all right, that's two off the body lock off a guillotine counter, and then gets the back body lock, takes him down, and then finishes. Fowler rolls, but he's still on the bottom of that position that was started with him not on the bottom. It's a takedown. It's 2 points.
Sweep-ish takedown.
It was takedown. I would determine what happened there in that sequence, because they were standing for long enough it to be a takedown. Like, that's why it didn't matter where they were in that series, because it was off of a takedown, which then put Kanan on top from the feet, which is But that's why I didn't have any issue with how it was scored.
I didn't either. I wasn't like, oh, no, this is wrong. Something should be changed. It's like, no, everything's right. Like, there's no argument about this. Everything is A-okay.
Yeah. So that was how that match went. Really, really, again, the most exciting piece of that match was the finish sequence for Duarte in the takedown and that initial guillotine off of the shot from Fowler on the single leg.
Yeah.
Where Duarte just goes for broke on that arm of guillotine, and Fowler has the wherewithal to, like, positionally change it and eventually work his head out. Like, Fowler's tough.
Fowler is really good. Like, there's no argument on that.
He just got black, right?
I think so.
I think he just got black.
Yeah, I want to say yeah, he just got it. But, like, he's been beating dudes consistently.
Yeah. He's been at that level. He's one of those guys on the level, have been there for a while. It's just sort of a technicality that, like, yeah, you're black finally. Like, all right, cool. Yes. Yeah, but good match. And again, always surprised with Fowler's toughness in those positions and like ability to fight out and just pull
great through. At transitions. He's great at finding those positions where he needs to be.
Mm-hmm. So next match, you got anything else on that?
No.
We have a finals match between Kainan Duarte and Victor Hugo. Kainan takes it via decision.
This was like another, this was like the previous matches before with Hugo. Like, he just couldn't get with Kainan, should I say, not like, oh, his matches before in the night and earlier in the night. Like, Kainan is just like a step ahead of him when it comes to those things.
There was two inversions that you saw Hugo like sort of start for the back, but you saw him never really be able to commit the hands on the hips or beyond that because you saw Duarte setting up passes off of Hugo's inversions, which is a lot of guys like Kainan is very patient and he has very good balance, and it was interesting to watch Hugo go underneath for stuff when Hugo got to two positions two separate times that we see Hugo take your back off of. And with Duarte, you saw Duarte's positioning and where his shoulders were and like where his hands were positioned and where he was shifting his legs, where you saw Hugo not be able to commit to push him forward because then he would have to throw his legs through, and you saw Duarte set up to go for like an outside knee slide pass or get around. Like, you saw Duarte putting himself in a position that like, okay, Hugo's going to commit to putting his legs forward to throw the hooks in or to throw the leg out to get my back, and I'm going to pass off of it. And Hugo had to sort of abandon and continue to roll through. You just don't see guys do that. Like, it's just not a thing that people can do. So I was, again, astonished with kind of Duarte's ability to just continue to have that composure and, like, that patience in those positions to set it up, to wait. And then, like, when Hugo gave him a second, like, okay, keep working. And then, okay, it's time to reset. And they both could kind of reset the position. Like, that level of patience is pretty special at the high levels for guys. Like, in those transitions, like, some guys thrive in those transitions. And Duarte is definitely one of those guys. But to have him also be able to go, yeah, I'm going to wait and set up this thing and then look for my time. But I'm never going to force the opportunity here in this middling transition spot. It was pretty cool. Like, it's something not a lot of guys have the balls to do. It's because you're almost getting your back taken and you're looking for a sweep off of it and not letting the guy get far enough in to push for the back take.
I'm on escape. I wouldn't say a sweep off of it.
Sorry, not a sweep. Yeah. A sweep. I mean, a pass.
Yes. Again, great. $15 is not a whole lot of money.
The winning ahead. Sequence in overtime is Victor Hugo almost gets his back taken by Duarte, and there's a period of time with Duarte working for the back, working the hooks, and Hugo's doesn't ever finally settle, but Duarte doesn't ever finally settle on Hugo's back, but that was the ending sequence. The refs gave it to him because it was a very, very close match in regulation, but that sequence kind of put the stamp on it in overtime that, like, kind of took
it. And you couldn't, like, you can't complain about it either.
No.
Like, Hugo's going to complain about it because he can be like, I thought I won. It's like, we're only judging on the overtime.
Yeah, round. which again, Josh and I have our problems with the overtime. We can talk about at length probably at a later episode because we've kind of beat that dead horse
so many times
into the ground
so
now.
So many times. But yeah, make the fucking mats bigger.
Yeah, make the mats bigger.
Holy shit, make the mats bigger.
Yeah. Like, I think they talked about it. The Brian McGuire, CEO of Third Coast, not CEO, the promoter for Third Coast, the like event runner for Third Coast, talked about, some stuff we did wrong. Mats definitely getting bigger. And they've made their mats bigger before.
They need to make them bigger again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially with big dudes, you just need to make them bigger. The other thing
anytime
is, like,
you're having Hugo and
if
Duarte,
you're pulling, if you're pulling 200 plus pound dudes into a position, like, and you're trying to remember where everybody was, and then you get into the argument of no, his hands were here. No, fuck that. Don't let go, especially if you're standing up. And we saw this on Third Coast, and it happened on EUG. It's like, don't
walk them back
in the position in that you're holding, unless it's like you cannot recreate it.
I want that in the rules. I want that in the rules meeting.
Yeah,
where it's like, hey man, if we're gonna reset you, like, don't change your, like, kind of what other promotions
or
do.
Or fuck it, get like four fucking people and lift their asses up.
Yeah, that's what
in a position.
That's kind of like the way that Fight to Win does it, with just like, hey, you're here, stop. They get three people to just pull you back to the center.
Yeah, because the restarting, and then like it becomes like, oh no,
with heavyweight matches, it's always hard because the guys are so big and they cover so much distance.
Throw
them so
motherfuckers
fast
on a pallet. I don't care.
Yeah. So want to move into super fights?
Let's run through them really quick.
You want to do the names? Me do the names.
Jesse Crane defeated P. Eckhart via tech fall, 12-0. We're going to see Jesse Crane on who's number one at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm. Good match again. 12-0. Third Coast Grappling has something I like, which is the tech fall. We don't see it a whole lot in the big matches because guys are so good. They have skill parity. It's very, very rare.
I think
we've seen it only twice ever in like two of the Kumites. It's super rare. But I do like it as a thing. Because like, if the match is going to go 12, you have 12 points on someone.
You're not going to pull Leandro Lowe and be up like 50 fucking points to nothing.
Right. It's just like, I've seen it, like, do 12 points. Next match, we had Seven on Marinon defeating Josef Gerbel via tech fall, 12-2. Dude, I love covering Savion. We've covered him since the blue belt. We did commentary for him at SAGC. We've covered him at Third Coast before.
I always forget who he is until...
Well, he looks so much bigger.
We talk about him a little bit more. I'm like, oh yeah, we covered him.
Yeah. Dude, he racks up like 10 points in the first like minute and a half. And then Yusuf goes not so easily, slows the match down, gets him, he has to fight off some heel hooks. They go kind of back and forth with leg locks, and then Savion gets the last couple of points and finishes it. But very, very good match. Again, I'm super excited what Marinon does.
Yeah.
After this, we've seen him consistently. I think he had a weird match where he had like the teen belt or like the blue belt. He had like a couple belts for Third Coast at the same time. I think he has belts at Fight to Win. Like, we're going to be seeing more of him. Keep your eye on him, definitely in a big way. He has looked good. I think he's a Marcelo guy. He's only looked better and better every time we've seen him. This match was no different. Very, very exciting match at the beginning there.
Niles Peebles defeated Josh Walker via decision. John Combs defeated Andy Cordova via rear naked choke. John Combs just like...
But not a guillotine. This time.
No, but plugging away. The dude's, again, another great competitor.
Mm-hmm. Technically a local-ish guy now. Studio 840. That's Jersey.
84?
No. Is it 84?
Yeah.
540 and 84. I always want to make it Studio 840.
Does he just go out there, though, or is he there?
He's an instructor there, I think. With Jay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, we should make a trip when it's not pandemic-y.
I mean, I would make a trip pandemic-y or not.
You would. Josh, I have all this new camera gear we're going to bring there. Maybe shoot something that I have plans in my head. I've thought about this many times.
Yeah.
Rear naked. I mean, he nice knee cut to the back. Eventually gets a rear naked choke in. Very dominant match. Looked good in the match.
Lucas Valente defeated Justin Rennick via straight ankle lock.
17 seconds. Lucas
not as quick
got
as Musumeci.
Not as quick as Musumeci, but still looked really good. We've seen both guys a lot, but Lucas Valente, former world champion, locks the ankle lock, immediately kind of like grips on it hard, and you see Rennick kind of like go, ooh, and start to like turn out. And Valente goes, oh, I'm in a really good position on his leg. Turns down, goes belly down inside. It's no-gi, so you can do that, and just yanks, and Rennick has to tap. Very quick match. Like to see both guys.
So. Again, yeah.
Yep.
Mona Bailey defeated Trinity Pun via decision.
Yep. So that does it for Third Coast Grappling 6. I would like the commentary guys, like their mics were picking up a ton of the audio of the room.
Yeah, the background audio is kind of annoying
it
to
was,
be picked up while they're
really
talking.
It was really loud.
And
they also fucked up Kainan Duarte's name, which was
a lot
confusing.
And they also, throughout the entire night, kept saying that the prize money was more than it actually was.
They were saying the old money, which was 20 grand. This was a 15 grand prize money. Now, there was a couple of things that were a little odd here.
A little
here
wonky,
and
but like it didn't make the show bad. And no. I love Sean Williams. He's got great jiu-jitsu knowledge. Brandon Mullins, also great jiu-jitsu knowledge. It's just like they got to work a little bit more and less like kind of bullshit.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that in like, the broadcast where it's
at one point somebody asked if somebody went to the bathroom but asked in a weird way.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can understand like a little bit of fun and banter and stuff, but I don't care that somebody just went to the bathroom and took a piss or, you know,
on the broadcast it wasn't my favorite.
It
thing.
Wasn't like a thing.
I would
and
much
maybe
rather,
they were drinking and they were just really loosey goosey.
And I get
I don't
that,
know.
But I don't
want to hear it personally.
I would much rather
which
a little
is
bit
kind of surprising
more
coming from me.
Yeah, a little more focused there and like more specific knowledge from like coming up guys and talk about the previous matches and like those interstitial times instead of kind of bullshitting. I would much rather hear about like. Educate me on the matches I'm going to see or like information about the grapplers that I might not know, because very frequently on like broadcasts I hear stuff like we do this every week, I know a lot about these guys, but the showrunners running the events a lot of times have information that I don't have that I would love to hear about, like, oh yeah, hasn't got his guard passed in 4 years, hasn't got scored on in like this way and hasn't been taken down. Like those are things that I love to hear about, because that gives me talking points, it gives me things to look at later in the match or things to consider for the matches I've just seen. It adds to the broadcast. I would love to see more of that, and I would love to be able to hear it much more clearly and have the commentary not like yelling, because they were trying to yell over the ambient noise a lot. They were talking over each other a little bit.
We gotta
fix
that, a little equalization. Put like a little partition around them so you can fucking hear them.
Yeah, so the event audio is not coming through. That was the only thing aside from like the mat size. Like that's what I want to see changed.
Just like tiny little tweaks to make things better.
Like the replay was great. I loved seeing a replay of like the big moments of the match.
Sometimes it would happen and sometimes it would not. And sometimes it was like kind of wonky. Like just nailing down small little things that probably 95% of people did not give a shit about.
Yeah.
And then, like, people like us are like, that's what we'll nitpick over.
Give me the full names on the broadcast. Don't give me the abbreviated names. Like, those are a couple things that we kind of talk about repeatedly, but first pay-per-view on Fight TV went gangbusters. Again, I'm
for the most part.
Happy.
In the very beginning, there was a stream issue where it just, like, crashed. And there was like, there's no feed. And I was like, oh, this could be really, really bad.
But it got fixed.
The audio levels were kind of fucked up. And switching from flow to just doing something else, just tiny little tweaks. But other than that, like it was a really, really good show.
Yeah. And if you want to watch it, like it's worth the money. Like it was a really good card.
Yeah,
really interesting matches.
Hopefully they did a good amount of buys.
We've
heard some things, but nothing's official.
I heard they did good numbers.
They did good numbers.
We're gonna get another one. I'm hearing that it is one of the better selling pay per views in jiu-jitsu,
which is great
because again,
that's just another avenue, and maybe certain things that are like. Maybe trying to get to Flow, we'll be like, well, maybe we can do this on our own. And that's not a knock against Flow. They put on a lot of great stuff, but sometimes they can, like, the way they do it is kind of shitty as well. Mm-hmm. So there's no monopoly on jiu-jitsu. There's other things where you can find it in other places.
Yeah. And
so good on them.
Guys are getting paid.
Yes.
Which is always kind of one of the things.
Don't owe people money. Don't be shady.
Which is one of the things I always try to champion on the show is like
Seth Daniels will talk mad shit about you.
Definitely, because he pays. Seth Daniels always pays
so much shit about you, and I will go. Yes, Seth Daniels, you are correct. Pay your people. Yeah. Don't be a piece of shit. Don't be Halleck Gracie.
That's for sure. Gordon Ryan has to fight you for the money.
Oh God.
So that's all I got. Again, great show.
Yeah,
we have some pieces of criticism, but overall, like, absolutely worth it. They're running another one coming up in
I think it was June they showed it. They flashed it up.
It was,
I think it's June.
Is it that far away, really?
I mean, that's not far away. It's April.
Yeah, 6/19/2021. Yeah,
June.
I can't do math. Yeah, so 6/19. So I'll definitely buy the next one. Like,
fuck,
I think
yeah.
a bunch of us will definitely buy the next one.
Yeah.
It was hands down worth it. I am super excited to see what changes they make.
Yeah, if they're even...
They publicly already talked about, hey, we're going to change some things, which is, like,
great.
I love to hear.
And if they're not making this, like, a... like bi-weekly thing, and not even like it's bi-monthly, if you think about it, you have to pay $15 six times, so what's that, $90
a year to watch dope ass matches?
Fuck yeah,
like, yeah, I'll buy it.
It's like, even if you don't watch any of the super fights and you only watch the tournament that they're running, like, awesome.
Yeah, help the guys get paid, enjoy the jiu-jitsu, watch the technique. Yeah, there's a lot to take away here. Hands down worth it. Super happy that how their first event turned out. Let's move on to EUG, Elevate Your Game, inaugural 160-pound featherweight, question mark here?
Under tournament. 160.
Wait, $10,000 tournament. Bunch of guys. I've read eight-man tournament.
Bunch of guys.
Where do you want to start, Josh? Quarterfinals?
Why would we start at the finals and work our way backwards?
We used to do it that way, Josh, because we didn't know what we were doing back in the day.
Yeah, and the show also took like 4 hours to record,
it did.
It took you like a day and a half to edit it.
It did.
So, you know, we've evolved our game.
We have evolved our game. That's
although
good.
Although, I personally, I hate like abbreviations of short words. Your, like, okay, it's Y-O-U-R. Okay.
Moving on.
You are.
So on to the quarterfinal matches. Mateus Gabriel defeats Jonathan Alves 4-2.
Really close, but you saw Mateus Gabriel, he scored, and then Jonathan scored, and you heard Mikey Musumeci, good on him, explaining this rule that he was the last person that scored, so it puts the onus on Mateus Gabriel to do something, or he'll lose, since it's technically a draw.
So in the event of a draw, which is a rule I kind of like here.
Yes.
Because EUG uses a special rule that is the if you have a tied match, at the end of the match, the person who scored last wins. There's no decision. It's just like, look, it's 2-2,
no,
it's 4-4,
no,
you scored last, you win.
Yeah.
And so it immediately puts this artificial incentive on the guy to, like, oh, I've got to move. And it's like, well, then, like, the guy is going to have to score back. Like, that's the point. Like, it pushes the action where it's like the guy's not going to get scored on, but the other guy is going to do everything he has to do because he is then losing the match, even though it's technically tied. So it puts a really interesting, again, it'll get gamed one day, but in this match, it was really good because you saw Mateus Gabriel put the fucking afterburners on.
It wasn't even the afterburners. He got swept, like, he was, you know, it was 2-2 at one point, and he was just like, oh, okay, I know where I need to be to set things up and get those points.
Yes.
We talked about it again in, like, the pre-show workup to this, is his fight IQ, his jiu-jitsu IQ is super high.
Very, very good.
Super high. Like, his gamesmanship, what he does, it's very, very, very high. And it helps him win. And near the end, you see, like, Jonathan's trying to come up, and Mateus grabs the leg, and they both stand up with, like, a single leg. So they're both keeping each other up. They've made a bridge, essentially.
Yeah.
Where two legs are trapped, and each of their legs
is the double. It's the double single leg tech up for 50-50 no points.
Yes.
And that's what happened,
but it held out long enough to where it was like, that's where the IBJJF kicked in. He was like, I need to hold in long enough and then drag out this little bit of time, and I win.
Yeah.
And I mean, he gamed it perfectly because, as you and Zach talked about last week, Jonathan is really good at, like, tying it up. He can be down, but mm-hmm. tying it up and then just having enough advantages to win and, like, hold a position.
Well, this is exactly the dynamic that Zach and I talked about for why we didn't pick Jonathan to win this, is because he's a guy that will win on very, very small margins.
Most of the time. Other times where
he will absolutely blow guys out, you know, frequently as well. But I'm saying, like, versus the elite level guys, we very frequently see him win by an ad, a point, like, very small margins. So for a guy like Mateus Gabriel, who is also very adept at the highest level, again, world champion, adept at the highest level for playing that exact same game, in this format, like, it's very hard to edge a guy. And now all of a sudden, Mateus Gabriel, the onus is on him to score, and he's going to do more to score because we're not playing the advantage game, we're playing the I have to score game.
Yeah.
get there and then stall it out at the top, it is played into kind of how Matheus Gabriel handles these sort of matches.
And, oh, man, his Barambolo game. When you are getting compliments from Mikey Musumeci about your Barambolo game and how you're doing those things, like, you know you're doing something right.
Yeah, dude, I love hearing Musumeci on commentary. I wish he was a little louder because they had his mic a little quiet because he is a quiet, quiet
that's
guy.
The other, that's another thing, like, commentary again. And that runs kind of across a lot of the promotions that we cover is, like, commentary.
Most of them.
When it comes to, like, equalizing
levels. Audio levels.
It seems to be an issue a lot. Whereas, I was about to call him Tom Watson again.
Jake Watson. Yes.
Whereas Jake Watson, his mic was louder than Mikey's.
And I'm not sure if he had the same mic for the in-room broadcast, because he was also doing the
interviews. That was the other thing, too.
And that's what I was
kind of
confused about.
I'm not sure if, like, where he was to turn it on and off from being announcer to being commentary, because that can be like a difficult job when you're essentially doing two things at once. It can be somewhat annoying, and it's
we don't see a whole lot of guys in jiu-jitsu.
No, you
do
don't.
That. We see, like, in the UFC, like, Rogan does it, but there's usually a little more of a gap.
He's
between.
Like interview. That's the thing. Like, it's not announcing now, walking in, doing this.
Watson was doing that and interviews.
So he's
and
juggling
commentary.
A lot of things at once. The other thing is, like, not that Musumeci is a boring person or Watson is too hype, but you put together two people where their energy levels were, like, just way too different. Like, Musumeci, you see when he talks about jiu-jitsu, he gets excited about it. But, again, his mic was really low and he's not a loud person, to where Jake's levels were too high, and he, like, anything that he was doing would kind of, like, overshadow Mikey, and Mikey would be, like, giving you really, really, really good information of what was going on, and, you know, Jake's trying to add to it or trying to say something as something was happening, and it just overtook what Mikey was
doing.
And
again, that happens a lot when the first time you work with a guy on the mic. So,
yes.
Again,
it's
the,
like,
first promotion. It was
I want Mikey
I'm happy
on the
for
mic.
The commentary team.
I want Mikey on the mic more as a commentary person.
Yeah.
Like, because you can tell he's a little uncomfortable when just having general conversation constantly. Like, he doesn't want to have that conversation too much. Like, he's got an aversion to it.
Yeah.
And, but when you get him talking about jiu-jitsu, because obviously that's what the dude loves jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. When he started talking about what was going on and the little things, or him giving his little piece of advice, if I was there, this would possibly what I would
be doing. That's
the piece
I love the most, because he's fought a lot of these guys in this bracket. Like, he has a couple, like, he's fought those and those,
like,
a couple times, and Grippo a couple times.
They all play, like, roughly the same game.
Yeah, he's a rooster weight to light featherweight. These guys are lightweight to
light
featherweight.
To lightweight, yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's just like,
it's really cool to hear, have his insight there, because he has interesting insight regardless of the match. And he has fought a bunch of these guys, and he competes in these weight classes. So his insight was super cool to hear. I just want his mic a little louder. So that was a very long sequitur for, like, I want Mikey's mic a little louder, because he is astonishingly interesting to me to listen to during a broadcast.
Yes.
Next match. Andy Murasaki defeats Kende Masayel via decision. So this is the first time I think we've ever covered an Andy Murasaki match on the match. Murasaki match on the show.
No, I'm pretty sure we've covered matches of his from, like, Fight to Win and things of that nature, and we've definitely talked about him.
We've talked about him, I know that.
Before,
I
but
don't,
like,
know if we've covered matches for him, though. We should have.
Before is, like, purple and brown belt. We covered him at a Spider event. I can almost guarantee that.
Okay.
I can almost guarantee we covered him at a Spider event, one of the earlier ones.
Maybe.
Because
talked,
it was like, it was
we've
mixed
talked
belt
about
level
him.
Kind of
I
thing.
Just don't remember ever specifically talking. I've always, like, watched him off the show, but I don't think he's ever come up on the show.
I'm pretty sure, like, one of the first few spiders.
Okay. Regardless, Andy Murasaki, a black belt now.
What a debut.
Really, really good.
What a debut.
Taking on Kennedy Maceo, Cabrinha Jr.
Just put the pace. Like, people aren't ready for that shit. Like, he was coming in, he was throwing shit to the side, he damn nearly passed Kennedy's guard really early in the match, and just that set up the pace where Kennedy was playing defense like from the get-go, and Murasaki was just
did a great job with it, like the way
on the point, the way he was throwing the legs by, or the way he was just like his knee cut without abandon, like him just diving forward with that knee and not caring. I mean, he cares about it, but it seems like he does not care about the Barambolo, you know, the leg hook.
All the counters off of that, he is just willing to throw that.
This is
that.
A guy you would think would be at AOJ.
Yeah.
Because of his size.
He strikes me as an AOJ guy, but he's not.
But the
not.
Fact that he's at, like, Atos, and he's with Galvao, and he's just, it's wild. The kid was amazing. Mm-hmm. He, again, was just, it was constant forward movement, trying to get past Kennedy's guard. Kennedy, near the end of the match, almost grabs an omoplata, but I don't think it was like really anything that seemed to be too terribly threatening.
It wasn't a super deep turn to over like omoplata. It was getting set up, and it could have been problematic, but
it could have been. But
he dealt with it really well.
And the match ended, and Murasaki won that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely.
Via decision.
So, again, here's another frightening person that's coming up in the lighter weights of black belt.
Brand new black belt. Black belt debut match to take Kennedy to decision.
Either they're sandbagging him so much that they've been black belt for so long that they've just, like, sharpened everything, and now they're just terrifying black belts, or the level has just jumped so much.
The crazy thing, I think it's both. I think it's, like, the guys that are 18, 19, 20 now are at such a high technical level, and they've been fighting with those guys at the gym for so long, for so many years. And like the meta has shifted slightly, but they've been watching and tracking and following. Like years ago, we'd see guys, they played a game, they got the black belt, that was kind of their game, and they'd kind of maybe changed a little bit. Like we're now seeing guys coming into black belt at the current meta and then evolving and changing,
just immediately being good.
Yeah.
Cisneros.
Yeah. We're talking about
Murasaki.
Him later. Murasaki. Taking on Kennedy. Taking on Kennedy this next week at Fight to Win. At the main event. Cisneros versus Kennedy.
Rafael Agatis. Another one.
Immediately. Like black belt in 2020. Taking Elizabeth Clay. Same thing. Like they're coming into black belt and being monsters immediately. So that was that match. Next match we have Marcelo Andre defeating Isaac Dodolin via decision.
This one wasn't like not a lot was going on. Dodolin was on the bottom for a majority of it, and Marcio was just trying to get by.
Dodolin has really good V-guard work. I mean, that's...
Yes, but like again, like the throw-bys and the near passes and things like that gave him the match. That one wasn't as exciting. I haven't seen a whole like a purely gi tournament in a while, so I got really, really excited that this was going on. Like I was like, ooh, grips and underneath and all this other tiny minute bullshit that everybody's like, this is dumb. I'm like, no, you're an idiot. You don't know what you're looking at. And it's this lighter weight class, so you know you're gonna see like action even if you don't get submissions.
You tend to see less like, I don't use the word stalling. You tend to see much more like defined, I want this exact position here. Cause guys,
and that's what they want.
Because you don't see it as much. You don't see muscling by of things at the low weight classes because guys are so good at regarding and they're so flexible to get their legs and arms involved for the passing. Whereas the heavier weight guys, a lot of times can just like, I can just push past this if need be, and they'll try that. The lower weight guys typically, especially at the high levels like this tournament, don't try to just like push past something because
they're gonna attack that one specific position and keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Which
so you get a lot
to...
of very small technical grip fights and battles where it's like, okay, a switch from like a collar grip to a low pant grip to like an inside pant grip to I'm going to turn his knee very slightly here while I shift his hips. And I'm going to bring back down. I'm going to bring to the hand and then to the lower elbow, pull that in a little bit. And he's going to counter that grip and pull up. You get all of these little grip fights. Again, I wish all the guys had different color gis. Makes it a little easier to see.
Sometimes they did.
Some of the black on black. I think Marcio had a white gi and Isaac had the white, had a darker gi. So that was helpful.
I don't know. Mateus Gabriel earlier in the night had a black gi. And I was like, it's a little flashier than I normally like, but I kind of want that gi.
He had a white with red, didn't he?
No, he had white with like Japanese kanji or something on it. The black one had red.
Oh, he had double. Okay, I thought that was a white gi. Yeah. It was a double red stripe. He wears that gi occasionally. I like that gi because it's red and flashy, and I like red flashy gis. But so that was that match. Marcelo Andre takes that via decision, close decision. Just more active on top with the passing attempts versus Dodo. Dodo was really never able to open up his game.
Yeah.
And that's really Marcelo takes it just with kind of sustained forward pressure there. Next one, we have Gianni Grippo taking on Johnny Tama, beating him 4-2.
So this was, again, what we were talking about, like where they were specifically knew where they were going.
Yeah.
And they only wanted those things. Grippo is like the old head in this. Like him and Marcio are the old black belts in this tournament.
Is that crazy?
Yeah, that's
weird. When did he get black, Grippo? 2012?
Maybe 13 or 14.
13, 14, yeah. There's that very famous video, I thought it was 2012, with Marcelo giving him the stripe and the belt.
Well, he pulled out like a belt that had four stripes on it.
Yeah.
And if it pops up on Reddit every once in a while.
Like every like 6 or 8 months it pops up where it's like, oh, Marcelo surprises a student. And everyone in the comments like, yeah, by the way, this student is Gianni Grippo, multiple time world medalist, like pan champion, like this yeah. is, and it's always a student. And it's like, yeah, everyone's like, okay, this is Grippo.
Yeah. Again, it was like sweeping. It was back and forth with that Grippo constantly trying to get to the back, but it's another thing. And it blows my mind that Main doesn't do this. Main fights you like he's way heavier than he is.
Oh, yeah.
But he doesn't do any of this like smaller guy shit.
Bro, all of my training partners are like 185.
I'm aware of that, but that should make your smaller game shit
like being on the bottom.
I love being on the bottom, man. I'm fat as fuck. Yeah, Josh, because
you're
bro.
Fat as fuck. That's why. As a little guy, being on the bottom with big guys, I have a
You ever herniated... been under like a 300-plus pound dude?
Yes, Josh, and I'm 148, as we discussed right. earlier. Which is also why I'm having back surgery in a week and a half.
Well, I also was under fucking 300-plus pound dudes when I was like 170-some-odd pounds.
So, back to the match. Grippo versus Tama. Grippo gets it done. Two sweeps.
It was close. They were both going at it. It was a great match. I can't remember, but Tama was probably one of the bigger guys with Marcio.
Yeah, Marcio and Tama were the bigger ones in this event overall.
Great match. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to the semifinals.
On to the semifinals, Mateus Gabriel defeats Marcio Andre via decision.
Another close one, but again, Mateus's fight IQ got him the victory. And his De La Hiva, his guard play is what won him the match. Like, everything he was doing was just right. And Marcio was, like, trying to get by. And there were some times where you're like, it's kind of
really
close.
Sustained forward pressure, kind of similar to the Dodolin match.
Yes.
Here. But
Mateus, like, was just threatening more with sweeps and all these other things. And that's what ultimately, I believe, gave him the decision.
Yeah, I agree. He just would off-balance him, and he would just like get more going more frequently than Marcelo, just pressuring from the top. That was really never able to open up Mateus here. Like, he never was able to get to the gripping sequences he really wanted to establish and, like, throw by hard on Mateus. Mm-hmm. Mateus was always able to kind of maintain space and distance with whatever guard he was using, whether it was sort of like a high Z guard or, like you said, De La Hiva, and out and just keep Marcio at that distance where he could never really kind of pressure, pass, and smash you like he sort of likes to do or get around in the way he likes to get around.
Let's go to Andy Murasaki defeating Gianni Grippo via triangle, which apparently, according to Flo... this is the first time Gianni has been submitted since 2014.
Bro, that's like 7 years.
That's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Like, especially with the competition that he's been going up against for that amount of time, that's incredible.
He has world medals in that time. Sorry, in a world like not golds, but medals.
I don't know if he's placed up.
Yeah.
No.
I swear, let me look it up. You keep talking.
Anyway.
And I will keep... I will
a great sequence,
up.
And you saw Murasaki do this throughout the night, was as he was starting to attack and put that forward pressure from those Barambolas, he would start to knee cut, and his knee would only be off if he's facing directly forward at him, like maybe 25 degrees to his left, but deeply shooting the underhook and just comboing it really well. Not like, oh, let's cut all the way through and then get the underhook. It was get my knee part of the way through and then make sure the underhook is all the way there to then control it. And then he would just start like grinding and diving on it. And he used it really well in all of his matches. He couldn't pass Kennedy with it, and he eventually passed Gianni with it. But it was just like amazing. I was like, holy shit, this right here is a pass.
Yeah, yeah. Grippo has a silver at Worlds in 2017.
Oh, okay.
And he has a third place. He has a bunch of no-gi stuff as well. Like, he has a no-gi world.
I don't care.
Yeah, yeah, but
just the gi.
But I knew there was a, I knew he had a world medal in there in that time period.
I thought he didn't, but.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. When he took second behind Shane. I think that was the year that he got the second.
Yes. That was 20. No, Shane was 18, I thought. Because we covered it, and we wouldn't have covered the Worlds in 2017. We would have covered the Worlds in 2018. Because I would have made a pick at the end of 2017, and I picked Shane that year for the next year for 2018, like Nostradamus. Just saying.
Something like that. Then he got third that year. He lost in the semis to him, and that's where he got third place
from. I believe so.
I don't remember 100%. But Murasaki then starts to go over to mount, and Grippo was blocking the knee. So instead of like fighting it, he just stepped way up and started to sink in the triangle.
Loses to Leo Segoria.
That's in 2017. Yep.
Yep.
He stepped up way high.
Murasaki here in this Murasaki in this did, pass.
And went right to the triangle. Switched his feet for a second, switched back over into the proper triangle position, and got it.
One thing I loved about this transition from Murasaki here is that when he's stepping over to the mount, he has his close side arm for the far side of the leg he's going to turn over on Grippo's collar.
Yeah.
And so when he goes to basically do the big step over into the triangle or into mount, and Grippo can't, at that point, probably doesn't know exactly what he's going to do. He steps high on it. Grippo goes to do what you're supposed to do and posture in and turn essentially into the guard or roll out of the mount. But Murasaki yanks him to the side with this collar grip. So Grippo goes to sort of hip over and doesn't have the momentum, ends up still on his side in that position because Murasaki has pulled his momentum halfway over. So then Grippo has to take like another half second to re-square to get up into posture, and Murasaki can get his legs together at that point, so Grippo can't continue to posture up out because he hasn't broken down with the collar grip and he has the leg over. It was just this beautiful combination sequence that was super ballsy in the first place to, like, instead of going to mount, I'm going to elect to bring my leg all the way over into the triangle and then preempt you rolling by pulling your lapel and collar over to get you into this triangle position. Like,
I just don't think he could have gotten into mount because where Grippo was blocking it, he's blocking the knee.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that if he went over to it, that Grippo would have like somehow managed to get underneath and they would have kept going.
Maybe, but Murasaki did a really good job in that pass. He had the close side knee and he had it pushed over too. Like,
I think he was just like, I can't get here. And I can possibly get here. Let me try this because I don't think he's expecting it.
Which, again, I wouldn't.
I wouldn't either.
Who would be expecting that? Like, who would be expecting?
And he got
caught. I'm going to the knee on belly here. Nope, I'm actually going to go to the mounted triangle, but not the mounted triangle, to my back from side control, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, that is just such an uncommon transition. Like, I can't recall the last time I've seen a high level guy ever on another high level guy go from side control neon belly sort of. I don't recall this ever happening. I've seen it at the lower levels, but I've never seen like a world level guy throw this. So it of course would catch you off because it's just not something that most people have the balls to do. So
right,
super impressive. Grippo does all the right things and Murasaki just kind of does something different. Again, why it was so impressive, why I picked up on all these little technical details, because it's so uncommon to see and I was curious to see why it worked. Josh, you got a pensive face.
Sorry, I'm jumping ahead, and I have stuff coming up for previews.
Nice. So, on to the finals match. So, yeah, Murasaki gets that done with a triangle choke finals match. Andy Murasaki versus Matheus Gabriel. Murasaki takes that via decision.
This one was the only thing where I was like, I don't know if I agree with the decision. I'm not mad. I just don't know if I agree with it. Murasaki was, again, forward pressuring. Had no issue with being on top and forward pressuring. Mm-hmm. At almost passing. Gabriel almost took the back, and Gabriel ran him out of bounds rather quickly because the mat was so goddamn small.
It was a pretty small
mat. There was a lot of restarts, and that pissed me off big time because it was just like, why is the mat so tiny?
Yeah, it was a very...
Guys were getting way too close to the edge of the mat way too quickly. So...
I want to see a bigger mat, especially with the level of guys that we have. Again, this is something we talk about very frequently for a lot of promotions. Like, the mats can almost never be big enough, but guys are... It becomes
frustrating.
You got
movers and shakers.
Yeah, it becomes frustrating when guys are really trying to drive out, and then the mat becomes what stops the action as opposed to, like, them stopping the action. It's just frustrating as a viewer. I think Murasaki did a lot here. Like, I finished this at the end. I was like, I can see an argument for both guys. It depends on what you value for, like, the action at the end of the match.
Yes.
And I didn't really, again, like you said, I didn't really have a problem with Murasaki taking the decision. It was a very close match. You can make an argument either way for one guy being edged over the other. I think the beginning of the match was very clearly Mateus Gabriel.
Yes.
With the way he was pushing the action, like in the positioning, and was taking
the
back.
Lucas Leitch thought that too, because he was in the corner fucking freaking out like, yeah, he's got it. So, you know, I'm not mad. It was really close. Great debut for Murasaki.
Yeah.
And Mateus again looked great. I can't wait to see all these guys in like IBJJF tournaments. Like, not to get me wrong, and we discussed this too. 7 minutes, I think, is the perfect amount of time for a black belt match.
Yep, I agree. I love
10 minutes. Sometimes can drag out. You're not going to get as much action.
Almost always. I think a 10 minute match, 5 or 6 minutes, always drags.
It's a little too short.
I like AJP with the 7.
7 to 8, I think, is perfect.
I like 7 with aggressive stalling penalties. I like 6 with reasonable stalling penalties. Like, I think AJP with the 6 does a great job. We're going to talk a little bit about AJP in a minute here for the previews. But I think that 7, if you're going to have like normal stalling calls, is very good. It tends to stop that 2 minute bullshit at the beginning of the match, and it tends to stop that 1 to 2 minute bullshit at the end of the match for guys like waiting till they go. I also find that you have guys will start attacking at about 1 minute 30, 1 minute 40 left in the match, versus in a 10 minute match, they'll start attacking at like a minute 10. It's just like you get an extra 30 or 40 seconds of really intense action out of a guy with a shorter match. They're not as tired and they're ready to go, as opposed to them needing to just eat more time on the clock, because a lot of times it's just not feasible for these guys to fight at the level that they intend to fight in the burst, that they're used to fighting in bursts for that 10-minute match. So, yeah, 7 minutes is where it's at. I think with 6 minutes, sometimes you're a little frustrated if a match is going really well, that, like, it's only 6 minutes. 7 minutes, there's usually never that problem because it's enough time. 5 minutes is way too short. So, yeah, I agree with Josh here. 7 minutes is where it's at. I'm usually not that mad at a bad 7-minute match.
These are all, like, good.
And these are all good matches. Like, there's a lot of decisions here, and there's not a lot of positional changes, not a lot of scoring, but there is really interesting stuff to take away from all these matches.
Tiny little details that you can pick up.
And listen to Musumeci talk on commentary, because he is a treat to hear on, like, commentary with the technical expertise that he brings and his discussion of, like, what exactly you are seeing. You know, I like Watson with the play-by-play. He did a great job there. But I just love the technical expertise that Mikey brings, especially to like something like a lower weight class tournament. I would love to see more folks feature him on commentary, and then more of his co-commentators like feed him places to go with it. Like, give me the play. Like, Watson's great on play-by-play. Give him that, and then be feeding Musumeci like pieces to go on, because
just
I think that would be a great
combo. Tosses that he can just fucking smash out of the park.
So yeah, it was great overall. Really happy with their inaugural event. Would love to see more. Hope they put on more.
I like how you're just trying to skip over one match.
I'm not
like
trying to skip over it. Let's move on to the women's title match. Your keys are in the way, Josh. Maisa Bastos beats Jessa Kahn 21-2. Now you would hear that and think that this was like a blowout match. And at the end, in the last 2 minutes...
It was.
Jessa scores 19 points in the last...
Maisa
Bastos scores 19 points in the last 2 minutes. But leading up to that point in the match,
it was fairly even.
It was even. It was even at one point, wasn't it?
Oh, it was 2-2 at one point.
It was 2-2 at one point.
But I don't... There was, like, no urgency on Maisa's part. No. I think she swept. She went to go do something. I think she went to fall for a foot. I'd have to go back and watch it again. I've watched it a couple times now. I think she fell back for a foot, and Jessa came up. And that's where she got her two. Mm-hmm. There was no, like, something that happened where you're like, wow, she swept Maisa Bastos. Maisa fell down, and Jessa came up.
Got to do what you do in the tournament.
I also, on the first run-through of this, was quite inebriated. So...
This is what I made you go back and rewatch before the show. Well,
yeah, because I was like, yo, Maisa waffle stomped Jessica. And I was like, she straight up took her lunch money. And he was like, I don't agree with you. And I was like, well, I will go back and watch it. I may have been very drunk when I was watching it. Let me go back. And then I did, and I was like, oh, okay. My memory apparently knocked out about 5 minutes of the match.
Where it was very close and non-scoring, really.
But when she went in and swept and was like, all right, it's time to go. She swept, passed, took the back, transitioned, went to mount. Like, she just racked up points.
Yeah.
She literally racked up 19 points in the span of, like, 70 seconds.
I think it was like 2 minutes. It was close to 2 minutes.
Something like that. But yeah. She ran it up big time, and I'm like, ooh. And there's the difference.
Very impressive performance.
There is the difference between featherweight world champion, or not featherweight, roosterweight female world champion, mm-hmm. and everybody else.
Yeah, Maisa is something spectacular. That's
So now we're going to have a matchup of people that have been beaten by Maisa,
mm-hmm. which is everyone of the which is everyone.
But again, which we'll discuss a little bit later. But between Grace Gundrum and Jessica,
in 2 weeks we'll preview it, I think.
Yeah, but still, like, that'll be interesting to see how they work out.
Yeah.
And see more of Jess's no-gi game. Mm-hmm.
So
that was EUG. Great job. Please put on another one.
Oh, definitely, dude. I love it.
I mean, they're doing 170 and below tournament next. He's from AOJ. It's not, it's the Gracie one.
Yeah. No. It's, Tynan.
That's who it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Tynan was saying he was in it. After Murasaki won, he was like, throw me in it. I want to do it. Like, he's like, I will take another $10,000.
So, Murasaki had 10 grand in cash.
Fat stack of
cash.
And
I was curious. I was like, for some reason, I think this event was in Vegas. The post says it was in Vegas. Vegas has very interesting rules regarding tournament pay. For, like, event pay for, like, events. So a lot of... my understanding is, in Vegas, you're required to have the prize money in cash on set. I think it's a Hollywood thing too, like a Hollywood jurisdiction. Cool. So I think that's what could be wrong. Yeah, I'm pretty sure
those were 20s. Stack. It wasn't hundreds. I don't know if $100 bills,
10 grand
looks like this.
It was fat stacks. It was cool.
I don't know because I've never held $10,000 banded. So if somebody's like, hey, I have a shitload of money and I've had 10 grand in hundreds banded up and that's what it looks like, cool, please let me know. But if you're like, nah, that was $20.
I've only had big checks for, like, my car and my house.
Yeah, like, I've had big checks where I'm like, eh.
It's a crazy dollar amount of money.
You ever been in a car accident and you get, like, paid out and you get, like, $5,000-$6,000 from it or whatever, and they're like, here. Yeah,
and they give you a check. Yes, Josh.
Yes, but when you go to the bank, have you ever just, like, straight up cashed it?
No, Josh, because I have no...
I've done that before.
...responsibility. And I was like, you can put this in my magical account where it becomes money and numbers... That freaked me out.
There was a while where I did not like having money in the bank. I didn't trust banks. Let's talk about this
on the outro section. Like why everyone should like rob Josh. So
I don't carry cash anymore.
Moving on to the preview section before we go off the rails. It's 10:30 at night right now.
10:21.
The show's got to come out in an hour and a half.
Good thing I've been keeping it clean this whole time. Yeah. There's easy editing. Cut it here, add this.
Pretty much.
Send it out.
On to our preview of Fight to Win 169, headlined by Kennedy Masael versus Josh Cisneros. I am...
For the 155 no-gi title.
Oh, it is for the 155 no-gi title.
Yeah, he's the...
Kennedy is the champion now. Yeah. Super excited for this. Josh, how do you think they match up?
I don't even know, because Cisneros is such like this, not a dark horse in the sense of like, oh, he might not make it past this round. Like, he's really good. He's scary
he's
good.
He's really good, and he's dynamic.
Like, I don't know if he's like legit 155 big.
Neither is Kennedy.
No, I think Kennedy has a little bit more trouble with the cut. I think Cisneros is a little bit like more built for the like 145
for like
pounds.
Light feather.
Yeah. I'd love to see Cisneros versus Juni in like a match for that.
That would be really fun. That'd be bantamweight though. I don't know if
Cisneros... 45. I don't think Juni would. I don't think Cisneros can go to 35.
And that's where Juni kind of.
But
Juni, traditional
Juni
bantamweight.
Will come up to 45.
Yeah, you came up for Kennedy.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to see it again. So how do you think this is going? This is a
Cisneros, I think, is just going to be like, we know Cisneros is just not giving a fuck. That's the thing. Like, he can be up. He wants to finish.
Yeah. That match like, him up from Pan sticks out of my head
and,
so much.
And with Fight to Win, and he's been on so many Fight to Wins, where he knows the rule set, like the attacking style and just like going
through
stuff.
I mean, he has Submission of the Year 2017 in Fight to Win.
I want to give this to Cisneros. Like, I want to say he's going to win. Yes.
See, I would have gone Kennedy, and then I saw Cisneros' Pan's performance, and like it just stuck out of my head as such like a
that's in
a
the gi. This is no gi.
It is, but just to watch him go through that performance, and with his style, like his style is tailor made to the Fight to Win. He's had multiple belts in Fight to Win. He knows the game. He knows the rules. Kennedy tends to play a little more defensive later in the match. He comes out. They both come out really strong. I could see someone getting subbed here. Like,
oh yeah, for sure.
Wouldn't surprise me in the slightest to have somebody pull a sub here. I can see Kennedy throwing an armbar. I can see Cisneros getting a choke. Wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. But I can see Cisneros maintaining a crazy pace throughout the match, and we've seen Kennedy get a little tired later in matches before. I am curious to see if Kennedy's like, he's had a few more matches with guys at the upper echelon, all the ADCC matches in Nogi. Like, he has a little more experience versus the high top of the mountain in Nogi, but Cisneros is right there. And I'm curious to see if he's going to be able to leverage that experience advantage he has to pull off a decision on Cisneros, or if Cisneros, just because he has a style that is so tailor-made to Fight to Win, can do it. Regardless, I can see it being close. I can see it being a sub. I can see it going either way. I can see Kennedy getting on top and just like slowing Cisneros down enough. No idea how this is going to go. I can see it going anywhere. These are honestly the most exciting matches for me to watch, because there are so many options that I can see it. I can see it. I can see it. I can see it. I can't check off any as, like, probably not going to happen. So, any of the pieces, Josh?
No.
Also in this match, we have Oliver Taza versus Gabriel Almeida. Very
This one's going to be
close. Match.
Like, Almeida's normally a weight class above at medium heavy.
Yeah. But Taza's also a bigger guy, too. Taza costs some serious weight to get to a lot of these tournaments. Like, we've seen Taza, I think, appear as high as, like, 190.
Possibly.
189,
but, like, I don't think he's that big. But, like, he's... I mean, he most recently just won against Johnny Tama,
yep.
At who's number one. But, like, he's taken some L's. Like, his record is listed on Flow as 15-10. Where, like, he's lost to all sorts of people. Mm-hmm. But he's also beaten all sorts of people. So it all really depends on how it goes. I feel... especially Nogi wise, he is going to be a little bit more ahead than Gabriel Almeida. And Almeida's been, you know, he's on and off as well. Where
the majority of Almeida's losses
to Ronaldo Jr. is by Kimura.
The majority of Almeida's losses here are by leg lock.
That's
by heel hook.
By
ankle
lock,
honestly. And by outside heel hook. He has two wins via toehold recently, but
Taz has just got, like, again, he's very focused on what he does.
Mm-hmm. Which is that knee bar and the outside and inside heel.
So that could pose problems for him.
Also, only a no-gi competitor versus Almeida will do both.
So that's, like, that's the issue.
I could see Almeida slowing him down and getting on top and playing a very positionally dominant game on Taza. I can also see Taza getting under in the fight to win rule set, having more sub attempts, keeping Almeida on the defensive in this match. So it's like I can see this either being a very positionally strong match from Almeida on top, or Taza getting underneath and winning a via decision or via leg lock. That's how I see it going. So next event, we have the Emerald City Invitational 170-pound tournament. We do not have a bracket at this time. Josh, I want to read through these names while I search to make sure we don't have a bracket?
Sure. We have John Combs, JZ Cavalcante, Andy Varela, Aaron Wilson, Andrew Tackett, Werther Marcellus, Bobby Emmons, Aaron Harris, Nick Ronan, PJ Barch, Danny Stolfi, Andrew Solano, Alan Sanchez, Kim Tara, Khalil Fadala, and Oliver Taza.
Yep.
This is going to be a really interesting...
Is Oliver Taza doing back-to-back days?
Is he... That's the same day.
That's interesting.
In two different places?
Because Philly is Emerald City, and I think Fight to Win is...
Fight to Win has to be in Florida.
I think it is. I don't know. So, very curious about that. If there are some names that are potentially incorrect there.
I think Taza's not on this. Like, also, it might still be up there, but... Yeah.
Also, for the super fights, we have Eric Naples versus David Zanaro. We have Garrett Lavaghi versus Richard Pena. We have Frank Rosenthal versus Luis Quinones. And we have John Callistine versus Ray De Leon.
Ray.
That'll be a fun match. We haven't seen John in forever. He's been injured pretty recently. He had to pull out of Zapatero, which is what it was. And that main event actually got completely changed because, like, both guys got injured. So it'll be cool to see Callistine because we haven't seen him in...
Oh, Ellis is on this, too.
Trials, I think. West Coast Trials, I think, is the last time we saw Callistine. So that'll be very exciting. I can't really speak to that. We saw Ray a little bit ago on a minor event. I'm not sure we covered on the show, but looked very good.
Jordan Peitzman's on this, too.
Oh, no shit.
Ellis and Jordan and Eric Naples, of course, and
Matt DeVroy's on here as well. Yeah, a lot of guys we know. So this looks kind of like a local event. This is Emerald City. This is in Philly.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of Philly guys that we know because we're in Baltimore.
Yeah.
So who do you pick offhand? We don't have a bracket yet. I just looked.
Combs is going to make it far. Andrew Tackett's going to make it far. Nick Ronan is always, like, a solid pick.
PJ Barch.
To go with Barch.
And Andrew
Kim
Tackett.
Tara.
And Aaron Harris. Alan Sanchez is good, too. This is very bracketing dependent for me.
Yes.
Where it's like, well, you get John Combs and PJ Barch in this first round
matchup.
Yeah,
you're knocking out some of those guys.
Okay, so.
Or you're getting like Taza and Barch or Taza and like they won't, I don't think they'll put, if Taza's on it, they won't put Taza and Nick Ronan in the same.
No.
Thing immediately because
Nick Ronan, Sarah BJJ, and Taza was
yeah.
Kenzo, but they trained together a long time, and like, so this is very bracket dependent. This is going to be a tournament that who has the nice night.
Yes, it's like who
just shows up.
Yes,
that night. I think this is very much what this tournament could be. It's an EBI style tournament, so that overtime plays a huge factor as well. Look for guys like PJ Barch to excel in that. You know, 10th Planet, tutelage there. Guys like Aaron Harris that have a lot of experience that are also big rear naked choke guys. John Combs, big rear naked choke guy. Should be a really fun event. Again, I can't really make picks. Never count out Andrew Tackett here. A lot of guys in here. Be very curious to have a bracket and to look it out. But we don't like preview events. We don't like to really talk too much about them without a bracket because it kind of just
not
doesn't go
like
anywhere.
Crazy.
That does it for Emerald City Invitational. looks a lot of fun. That'd be the night of my cousin's wedding, so I'll have to catch that on the replay. We also have next week the Abu Dhabi World Pro.
Tomorrow.
Starting tomorrow.
Yeah.
Black belts are going to go on the 8th and 9th.
We, of course, will shout out Flow because they have a preview of the country brackets, because you can only have two people per country in these brackets.
I was thinking about this week.
So it's going to be
it's always the world champion from the previous year that gets in if you're Brazilian. And it's always a bunch of other guys from that country fighting to get in. So every year you get what's called the bracket of death. Josh, would you like to explain for the listening audience what the bracket of death
is? It's just a bunch of
murderous Brazilians.
Murderous black belts that you're like, why aren't these guys...
But it's specifically usually the Brazilian brackets, because there's always like 4 to 12 high-level Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belts from Brazil, because it's a country bracket, that are fighting for two, typically only one spot to get into the World Pro. And a lot of times, lot of time the world of death, the bracket of death, the Brazilian bracket to get in, is harder than the actual World Pro bracket, or very comparable.
A lot of the times, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Matheus Gabriel said he was going to this, so he left from
Vegas
and immediately went to this. So that'll be interesting.
Because this is in Abu Dhabi, so that's not a quick flight.
No.
Tabor Scrabble has historically done very well for AJP.
I'm trying to get to at least the registrants. Registrants. There we go.
Did you get it?
There's a bunch of people that have not paid.
I wouldn't even bother doing this because it's corona-y time. So it's like, are you going to get in the country? Are you going to get out of your country? Are you going to get visas?
These are all like masters. I don't care about this.
So we will discuss this more in depth next week. Usually for AJP for finals, we only talk about the finals for it just because it's so difficult to preview. So difficult to recap given the time difference and given just how the event footage comes out. If you hear a dope match that you want to hear us talk about, shoot us a message on Instagram. That's the thing you kind of can get us on the most.
You'll get a hold of Maine.
You get a hold of Maine.
Occasionally I'll peek in on them, but I try not to look at them so it doesn't screw up Maine's...
That's how we keep it, Josh.
His message...
And how I triage messages throughout the day. So that looks like a lot of fun. Other than that, I think that's it, Josh. You got anything else for the week?
No. I'm going to train, which is going to be fun.
Nice.
I
got all of the surgery prep to do.
Yeah.
Which is just like...
into next week.
Try not to freak out as much because I'm freaking out a little bit because it's major surgery.
I wasn't going to tell you, but I'm going to tell you now that I'm just going to randomly start sending you text messages that make you nervous.
I know.
No reason whatsoever.
Yeah. Thanks, Josh, for being like one of my better friends and just like, hey, man, I know you're nervous about this major surgery you're having. Here's a text message like, thanks, Josh. I'm not like any less nervous now. I appreciate that.
Hey, but don't forget that they're going to slice your back and muscles by your spine in a couple of days.
I know. 14th, baby. Here we come. So, yeah, and that's like a cousin's wedding's on the 14th. And like right after that, it's like my back.
It's not
surgery.
On the 14th.
My cousin's wedding's on the 10th.
There you go.
Which is why I'm not in Philly covering Emerald City, unfortunately. Yeah. And then the surgery, and then I got to figure out how we're going to do the show the next week. I should be good.
It's Wednesday. That's a Wednesday that your surgery is. And then Sunday to Monday is when you're supposed to record.
Yeah. So I'm probably going to get you and Josh in.
I am Josh already.
Yeah.
So you mean Zach and
Josh.
And all I have to do is hit a couple of buttons.
No, all I have to do is run the board, and you and Zach run the show.
Oh, I can't wait till you're like, I can't get down the steps. Can you carry me?
I'll do it. Josh, I'm not doing this show with not me on it. You will carry my broken ass down these stairs.
Oh, man.
And we will
what
do
are those
the show.
Boards? What are the back braces, the backboards?
It's called a backboard, Josh.
Yeah,
yes,
backboard. I couldn't remember what it was called at first. Like, we get a backboard.
Yeah, we will backboard the show.
Zach and I come
Josh,
down
the show will
and
go
we
on.
Stand you up like a sarcophagus.
Look,
to hit the corner.
We're 184 episodes in at this point.
Oh, and I've been on all of them.
I've been on all of them, keeping the streak alive. I'm like that guy that played for the Orioles.
the guy that I can't remember that played for the Babe Orioles Ruth. That he played for the minor league team in Baltimore, but that's besides the point.
Andy Griffin.
What's the guy's name again?
You mean Andy Griffith?
No, what's the guy's name?
That
no,
that
the baseball guy that I can't remember.
Which one? Lou Gehrig?
No, not that the has, disease guy. Well, that had
Lou
the
Gehrig
disease.
Had
Lou Gehrig's disease, which is the most ironic thing ever. If you think about it, like, what are the odds?
It's ALS.
What are the odds? You get Lou Gehrig's
they
disease.
They named it after
Lou
him
Gehrig?
Because he was famous.
What are the odds?
He had the original streak, 2-1-3-0.
Yes.
And then Cal Ripken.
Cal Ripken.
Jr.
That's who it was. Cal
got
Ripken.
It. And nobody will ever beat it because he played for like another 300 or 400 games
in
after
the modern
that.
Era. You just can't do it anymore. Like,
you
it's not a
could.
Thing. You can't.
You just have to.
You have to be a gangster. So Cal Ripken's a gangster. And I've been in this stadium and I've conducted business in that stadium.
Dude, have reasons. You ever seen pictures of his old house?
Yeah.
Dude, sick.
So that does it for this week on the Grappling Around, Josh. Unless you get anything else.
No, I don't.
As always in the show, I'm your host, Mangel, my co-host,
Josh.
And we are the Grappling Around. We'll see you on the mats, whenever that is. Stay safe. If you like the show, please consider sharing it on Facebook with the folks at your gym. It's the best way that we grow the show, and we really appreciate it. You can reach out to us on email.
We also have Instagram. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. We have Google+.
Until that shuts down.
We have a website.
If you have an event you would like to have us cover, please let us know. If you have a name, like most people do, and you'd like to have us stop butchering it,
let us know.
Reach out to us. The show is also available on YouTube, Spotify, in addition to iTunes and every other podcast service. We very much appreciate your time, and thank you.